This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Observe Tech Podcast. This is episode 282 of the show. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com and ITProToday.com. I'm here with you on a Monday morning, the 17th of December. It's about 7 a.m. East Coast time here in the United States. Recording a day late because, as I mentioned on Twitter yesterday, I took the day off. It was my birthday yesterday, so my wife took me out to a very nice brunch when I would normally be recording the show. So I went ahead and did all my prep work and everything like that. Came home, had a great relaxing day of watching American football all afternoon and evening. Wrapped it up with a win from my Dallas Cowboys. And so now I'm going to sit here and I'm going to get 282 into the can for you so that you can have it later today. So thanks for your patience and understanding in the slight delay. I want to start off talking a little bit about one of my recent tech challenges. It's kind of become a custom of mine on this show. And this wasn't so much a challenge as it was in my head. See, I've been on the Xbox Insider program now for about 4 years, ever since it started. And it's gone through various iterations and changes and different rings and things like that. It's not directly synced up with the Windows Insider program, but it's a way to, over time, and the more questions you answer, surveys you answer, feedback you give, you start to earn some credit, and then as you put in the time, you get opportunity to get into higher levels of the rings. And so recently, I had gone into the skip-ahead ring that they had that was preparing for 19H1, which is we're expecting in March-April timeframe of 2019. As the seventh feature update for Windows 10. Xbox keeps a fairly close alignment with that schedule. But I started having problems. I was having problems with the EA Access app. I couldn't install the Madden NFL 19 demo so I could try it out. So I was just running into several little problems, little niggly problems. Never had any major issues over the 4 years, but there was enough going on now that it was just concerning me, so I wanted to do a reset. Now, I've got a lot of games downloaded. I got a lot of content downloaded to the Xbox One S. So I was a little concerned about a reset process because, one, I didn't want to have to repeat those downloads. Obviously, you know, having 1 terabyte of download every month is plenty of space for me. I tend to use about 75%. I didn't want to have to expend all that data at this point. But I did the research, I did the looking through the process, and it actually, if you're using an external drive, there's a way to keep all that content. Even if you're on an internal drive, you can keep your downloads and things like that. So it does reset settings and things of that nature, but it is fairly easy to do. You have to remove yourself from the Xbox Insider program. So you go into the Xbox Insider app or Insider Hub, and you select that console and you say remove from the program. And it might take a day or two for that to register and trigger. Once that does, you'll get a prompt to download the latest commercial or retail release of the Xbox One console software. And that worked exactly as I expected. I kind of accelerated the process in that I did a full console reset that basically reset the console back to fresh using the skip-ahead build. And then a few hours later, I got the prompt to reinstall the retail release. Did it. The games are there. My settings are there. Everything was in place. Everything. I had to re-log into some of the services and apps that I use. But all in all, resetting that Xbox console was fairly straightforward and easy to do. In fact, it was easier to do than a Windows 10 PC because I guess it's on the same parallel because with the Windows 10 PC reset, you have options to retain your documents and files and your apps, and then you have options that will remove everything. Same thing exists with the Xbox One console. So it really is a straightforward and easy to do process. Now, my recommendation is that you use an external drive to store your files. So I have a 1 terabyte USB 3.0 external drive, doesn't require any extra power, gets its power from the Xbox One console, and that is where I default store all the games I download, because these days games are getting bigger and bigger. The Forza Horizon 4 demo that was released last week was a, I want to say that was in the 20 gigabyte range. They had the Black Ops, or the Call of Duty Blackout Battle Royale demo beta this weekend. That was a 14, 15 gigabyte download. So they are big downloads these days, especially when you're getting into HDR and 4K content. So an external hard drive can really make a big difference, because it keeps everything intact and in one place. You get all your DLC goes there, and you can keep your apps on the local drive because it's easy enough to keep them in a reset if you want to, or to quickly download those. They don't eat up as much bandwidth. So it is easier than you think. So if you're on an Xbox One console and you're hesitant about a reset, I mean, I can't guarantee that your mileage is going to match my mileage, but you know, I avoided this a couple different times and kind of suffered through some challenges because I wasn't sure or comfortable with. Now that once you do it, you know, now my comfort level's there because I've done it, I've experienced it, and I had a good response and a result. So that's why I think now, you know, I would be very comfortable doing a reset in the future, because it was that easy to do and that easy to get back up and running, and having all my stuff right there ready to go. And then I want to talk about one other headline that kind of garnered a lot of attention last week. And this was this, let me skip back one. This headline, actually, I'm not putting a link to this story in the show notes, okay? But it is from an author who writes for a very prominent website that primarily focuses on financial type news, or at least it did. That's where it started. And the person, do you remember a few weeks ago, Microsoft announced that they had expanded the support cycle window for the fall feature update starting this September, starting with the October 2018 update that's due out next month. They will support that second half of the year release for 30 months now. That will give enterprise and business customers a bigger window to make their transitions and migrations to Windows 10 or between Windows 10 feature updates. So they did that, and at the same time, they announced that the extended support option was being publicized for Windows 7 users. So Windows 7 falls out of its extended support lifecycle. The end of its full 10-year support is on January 14th, 2020. And in this same blog post where they talked about the extension of the second half of the year feature update, so one feature update a year gets 30 months worth of support, the March update continues to only get 18. So businesses can choose to only upgrade during the fall to keep that extra time and space there, right? So the extended support option is a paid option. It's per device, and each year it gradually ramps up because Microsoft's goal is to get you on supported versions of Windows. However, if you can't move, are unable to move, choose not to move, or you haven't planned a Windows 10 migration yet, Microsoft will charge you to continue to get security updates for those devices. This is intended to help you facilitate the movement to Windows 10, but Microsoft understands that it's not been a straightforward migration for everybody, and so they still need support to stay safe and secure. Well, that monthly charge was very convoluted in this story on this website I was talking to you about, and by the author, that this was now a new Windows 7 monthly charge. And the way they caged it in the headline and in the story itself was that if you choose to stay on Windows 7, you're going to pay Microsoft a monthly fee. Well, yes, because that's exactly what Microsoft announced. They announced their extended support. They've done this in the past. They've done it with Windows XP. They did it with Windows Vista. They've done it with all major Windows versions. Is they offered this paid support in order to get folks through the migration and transition time into the next version of Windows. And with us approaching the end of the Windows 10 support lifecycle, it is completely in line on time for them to offer and make people aware of this extended support option. Now, there are some companies that will buy this and they will do it, and Microsoft will continue to support them, but I can guarantee you this, as it has in the past. Microsoft will not support those systems indefinitely, even though they are being paid for it. There's a reason why the cost ramps up it's an incentive for companies to get migrated to the next version of Windows, because that is obviously the better place to be. I mean, for Windows 10, for many reasons, security being the biggest one, the security features that are part of Windows 10 as an upgrade from Windows 7, which is, by the way, almost a 9-year-old operating system. Okay, think about 9 years ago, right? 9 years ago, that this January will be 9 years. So back in 2009, we barely had Twitter at that time. We barely had some of the advanced technologies that we use today back in those days. So, I mean, many of us don't even have, many do, but many don't even keep cars that long, okay? We don't have phones for sure that long. And so Microsoft has to cage their bets. In order to provide that additional support, there's going to be a fee for it. Well, the one thing it is not is this, the way it was written up in this article, it was kind of written to come across as this is what's the future. This is how the future is going to be for Windows. Yes, Windows 7 is the one in the barrel this time, but this is a norm. This has happened in the past. This is nothing new. And this is entirely intended to help support organizations, businesses, enterprises that have not made the transition yet, or that are working through the transition or making their way, but might have some Windows 10 systems that still need to be supported. This does not apply to consumers. You know, that's the other way this was written, was as it was slanted as if this was, quote unquote, the future for consumer versions of Windows, but it is not. Windows, if you're on a consumer and you're on Windows 7, you need to be on Windows 10 before January 14th, 2020, okay? That the best way to get on there is there are no free upgrades anymore. Those were gone after the first year, even though there were a couple other angles to get it. Those are now closed. So your best way to get Windows 10 is typically on a new device. If you're running a Windows 7 based system, now I know that Windows 7 based systems have been sold over the last several years, but it's been a while since that's been the norm, right? Windows 10 has been on there now for the last 3 years, Windows 8 on some devices before that. So bottom line is, there is no new monthly charge coming for Windows for standard 1-inch users. If you are an enterprise or business customer and you have Windows 7 systems that you aren't going to be able to migrate off to Windows 10 by January 2020, then there is an option for you to pay on a per-device basis to get extended support for those and get security updates and things of that nature. Okay, the other tidbit that really took the news this week, excuse me for a minute, the other thing this past week that really stirred the pot was this new prompt that was discovered on skip ahead and fast ring devices for Windows 10. The October 20 or one is for 19H1, next year's first feature update, and the October 2018 update that's coming up in the next, we're expecting in about a month. And that was, someone noticed when they attempted to install Chrome or Firefox on Windows 10, they got a prompt to try Edge before installing those. So it, Windows 10 sent the browser download stub and prompted the user with a window, a pop-up window, to say, You've got Edge on your system. Don't you want to try it? And of course, that then generated all the blog posts, all the discussions, all the social media stuff around this as being an underhand method of Microsoft, you know, inserting themselves in between people's choice. And since it's occurred and all these blog posts have come out and all the social media outrage and all of that kind of stuff, Microsoft has flipped the switch and turned that off and said it was an experiment. And in fact, in pre-release versions of Windows 10, anytime you see a new feature, there's no guarantee it makes it to the end. Anytime you see something like this, again, it's a test and experiment. Microsoft watched, listened to feedback, and they made a decision to turn it off. Now, does that guarantee it's never coming back in some shape or form in the future? We don't know. But for right now, it's been turned off, so it's not expected to be in the 18.09 this fall, or the October 2018 feature update. So, yes, you know, Microsoft hopefully listens to that feedback, because it's not good to create this kind of turmoil around your operating system. And yes, they do want Edge to be used by more people. But part of my discussion around this whole thing is that Chrome does it to me every time I bring up a Google service in Edge. Chrome doesn't do it when you bring those things up in Firefox. Edge, though, if you are on a Google website and you're on, let me get this straight. All right, so if I'm in Edge and I go to a Google website, I get a prompt that says, you sure you don't want to be using Chrome here? That would be better. But if I'm on Chrome and I'm on Windows 10 and I go to a Microsoft account or Microsoft website service, I get a prompt that says, wouldn't you like to use Edge to do this? So it goes both ways. Some people measure one worse than the other, i.e. interrupting an install and a personal choice. But Peter Bright had a great perspective on this, and that was from the fact that those of you who are listening to this podcast, myself, many in the tech press and stuff like that, we're different kind of users. This is nothing new. This is not a new thing you've heard from me. I've said this in the past. Many of these features, such as this prompt to say, hey, you know you have Edge on the system, and the ads, quote unquote, to expose other apps to users on Windows 10, whether it be through the share charm or through the start menu, is a means of discovery. It's a means of helping users discover features and opportunities and capabilities within Windows 10. They aren't intended for us. We know these things. We typically know these things very easily. We hear about them, we read about them, we're engaged, and we find out those things. But you know what? Your aunt, your uncle, your grandma, your grandpa, they don't. They don't hear about these things. They flip the switch on a computer. They expect it to work. They expect their email to be there, their Facebook, and whatever else. So Peter Bright was very right in saying that we're not the target audience for this kind of stuff, that it is those everyday users and that process of discovery that they're intended for. So you have to cage it. You have to look at it. You have to understand it. You know, your heavy-handed tactics can be troublesome. Microsoft knows this. You know, the Microsoft of the 80s and 90s knows this because of the antitrust around Internet Explorer. But, you know, it's a different world these days, and everybody wants everybody to use their stuff. So, you know, Chrome is the dominant browser, but they don't hesitate to let you know if you're not on their browser, hey, you ought to be using our browser, and vice versa for Edge. So every company has the opportunity to get that awareness out there into the community. But the methodology you got to be very, very careful with, so it's not interpreted as being too invasive or anything like that. So that was the other big headline draw this past week. We've also been very busy when it comes to insidering. We are at that stage of the insider world where we are in those final stages. We've been talking about this for a couple weeks. Microsoft has released a couple of builds this week. So we started off with build 17758. That was released last week into the, and no new features here. They might be one post they highlighted your phone, one post they highlighted StorageSense, I think it was. But 17758 was released. A couple days later, 17758 went to slow ring. So for about 4 hours, I think it was on Thursday, 7758 and 7758 were both in fast ring and slow ring. So we were overlapping for the first time in the Redstone 5 development cycle. And then 4 hours later, after this overlap, Microsoft released build 17760 into the fast ring. And we have not had any other slow ring movement. So that's about our fourth or fifth slow ring build, which is awesome because, as I've spoken about before, that has expanded the audience to about 65% of potential Windows insiders have the opportunity now to be testing the latest builds of Redstone 5. We also got earlier in the week, 17754 had been moved to slow. So last week we actually had two slow ring builds, and we had two fast ring builds for Redstone 5. We also had a Windows 10 SDK preview build based on 17754, which was from the week before. That came out this past week. And so we are definitely at that stage. I personally think, or at least I thought before the weekend, 17760, which doesn't have the watermark, and Microsoft had it in their post, their release notes. This is not the final version. It doesn't mean it's the final version. But I also noticed that the wording is the same as it has been in the last few feature updates, because Microsoft wants to combat that. This might be RTM, this is RTM kind of stuff. Well, I personally thought 17760 had the chance to be the final build. Because if you think about it, the rumors, Brad Sams reported on Petrie.com last week in the Sams report that it looks like Microsoft is going to sign off on the final build this coming Friday, or that's at least what he's been told through a reliable source. So if that's the case, 7760 could very well be the final build, or at least I thought so last week. But over the weekend, a couple of other builds have been pushed out, according to BuildFeed. In fact, let me pull it up real quick here and read what it says. I can't remember the builds because I know that 17761 came out shortly after 6.0, but that doesn't mean that there would have to be another build in the chain. But it was a possibility, of course, that that could change. So looking at Redstone 5 builds, we have since had 17761 released on the 12th. 2 days later, they released, or 2 days later, we saw 6.0 come out, right? That was compiled on the September 11th, last Tuesday. And then we also had on September 13th, build 17762. And then the next day on September 14th, 17763. So having a couple builds beyond 17760 now kind of indicates to me that we're probably going to get another fast ring build this week. Right now, I think that candidate is 17763. Microsoft has the ability. That was released on the 14th, which was Friday. That gave them the weekend to look at that in Canary. And then possibly today or tomorrow. They don't typically do Monday, Tuesday releases, but at this stage, that's not out of the norm because that's kind of the pace you're at now, getting those final builds sorted out. So we will be watching that very closely. But those last three builds, 6.1, 6.2, and 6.3, are not public yet. They're private builds. They were in Canary Ring inside of Microsoft. So we're watching, waiting. We're getting really close to that point, though, okay? Because we fully expect the feature update to come out in October. I think it'll be the week after Patch Tuesday, and that's when we will see that final update. So we are standing by and waiting for that final stage. Skip ahead side of the house, 18237 was released to anybody on skip ahead for Windows 10 19H1, which is the first feature update of 2019, the seventh overall. And so we continue to move forward with that as well. Sticky notes, I don't know if you've tried the new sticky notes, but it continues to get some updates and continues to work very well in skip ahead. In fact, I'm very anxious to get that app update on FastRing and then ultimately the October 2018 update and production versions of Windows 10 because it is just so much fun to have that on my desktop. All right, so last week, your Windows 10 tip was about setting up Windows Hello from the lock screen. That was a new feature of the April 2018 feature update. And then Microsoft last Tuesday was Patch Tuesday, so Microsoft released updates to a couple of the Windows 10 supported stuff that is out there, so you need to check on those and see what's new. On the consumer side, you should have it if you're running Windows 10 Home. If not, check Windows Update, and you'll get all up to date and sorted out. Ed Bott has a really good blog post about after a Windows 10 upgrade to do these seven things immediately, and he kind of steps through seven different tasks that he recommends that you take a look at before you move forward around privacy and security settings and make sure they're done and that you've gotten rid of some of the things like suggestions and app suggestions and things like that. So it's a really good blog post to take a look at if you're working on a new build of Windows 10. Microsoft, I just posted this morning on WindowsObserver.com. Microsoft is planning to deprecate the disk cleanup utility in Windows 10. This line is kind of buried at the bottom of a StorageSense related post on the Microsoft Storage blog, where they talk about the new highlights in StorageSense and all the new features that are in there and capabilities. Part of the October 2018 update of StorageSense is the fact that we are going to have some extra management options for cloud storage, and the 50,000 foot view of this is that normally files on demand with OneDrive are managed automatically. So if you use a file, it'll get pulled down to your local hard drive for a while, and then if you don't use it for a period of time, it is eligible to be returned to the cloud, quote unquote, and free up that space on your device. Well, now you can actually dictate how long that file will be retained locally. So you can go anywhere from never, don't ever change it, or don't ever retain it, to 1 day, I think it's 1 day, 14 days, 30 days, and 60 days. 30 days is the default. Well, unless you've picked something to be stored locally, so if you've right-clicked on a file or directory in OneDrive and you said always keep on this device, they do not fall under this new setting. This is primarily for files that are managed automatically by OneDrive files on demand. So you can set that setting, and if you're on a low storage device, it's great because it gets you the file to work with it, but then it releases it. And if you want to go as short as 1 day or never, you can, but you'll still be able to get it locally temporarily, and then that space will be freed up. So that they are going to deprecate, because the Windows 10 StorageSense disk cleanup and management stuff has been modernized and it's become so robust, and in fact it has surpassed the capabilities of the disk cleanup utility in Windows 10, they're going to deprecate that disk cleanup utility. What deprecate means is that it will still be in the operating system, but it's not being actively maintained or updated, and it is eligible for removal in a future update. So it's going to be there for October 2018 update, kind of like the snipping tool with the new Snip and Sketch app and all those new features in this upcoming feature update, but it is eligible to be removed at some point down the road. So if you're a disk cleanup utility person and you use that, I recommend you get into StorageSense in the Windows 10 Settings app and you start to learn some of those features and figure out. Now, you can also set this to automatic in StorageSense, or you can set it to manually engage it and do some of the updating yourself. For those of you going to Ignite this coming week, I will be traveling down this Saturday to get there for the pre-day events on Sunday with my fellow MVPs, and then the event starts on Monday itself with the Vision keynote from Satya Nadella, and then a follow-up keynote, a second-level keynote from executives, and then we have a very busy week of Ignite, but they have the Microsoft Ignite app that we had last year is not going to be the default app this year. The Microsoft Events app has now had the Ignite content added to it. So you need to go to Android or iOS, download the Microsoft Events app so that you can get that ready to go. You log in the same way you do on the website if you're an attendee, and then you can also log in with your Microsoft account, I think. Interestingly enough, this was released for Android and iOS, but no Windows version. So I'm not sure if they intend you to access the Windows version via the web, which is very functional, or if they plan to release a Windows 10 app itself that uses that feature. So we'll have to watch and see what comes out this week. October 2nd, everybody knows, after Ignite, the Tuesday after Ignite, we have this hardware event in New York City for Microsoft. I've mentioned last week, I think, that I do have an invite, and I am going up to New York City for this event. It's a 4 p.m. event, not a typical 9 a.m., 10 a.m. kind of event at the beginning of the day. So I'm actually going to fly up early that morning and work out of JetBlue's Terminal 5 for a few hours, and then I'm going to go meet my buddy Rich Woods for lunch, and then we're going to head to the event together. And we might also, quote unquote, I'm going to get to it here in a minute, but Microsoft is inviting some insiders to that hardware event on Tuesday, the 2nd of October. It looks like the invites are going out to New York area, New York, New Jersey based insiders. I'm not sure the criteria, but they are going to invite a handful of them, and they're going to a local restaurant not far from the facility, and don't tell anybody, but we're going to crash it. We're going to be there for lunch when they show up. So we're already going to be there. So we technically aren't crashing it. They're crashing us. But anyway, so it's great that a group of insiders get to go to this hardware event. It's a neat thing to experience if you've never experienced something like that before. But there's some expectations about what we might see or might not see. A lot of people seem to think it's going to be a refresh. Nobody's expecting Andromeda, the new portable kind of device, small form factor Surface device. But there was some information late last week, and it was written about on Thurrott.com by Brad Sams, that there were some leaked images of Surface Laptop in black. So we don't know if there will be a new version of Surface Laptop. We don't know if there's going to be a new hardware category from Microsoft in the Surface line. The expectation pretty broadly is the hardware refreshes, but we might see some new colors added to the mix as well. Okay, new Canadian headquarters in Canada. In Toronto has been announced. Microsoft is moving their headquarters to downtown Toronto. There's a story on the Microsoft On the Issues blog about how photo DNA for video is being used to fight online child exploitation, how they're using that technology to fight that. There was another call for principle-based international agreements for governing law enforcement access to data. This is from Brad Smith, Microsoft president and their chief legal officer. So continuing to talk about access to data and the proper way to do that. Sustainability, Microsoft wrote about this past week. So the Microsoft On the Issues site was very busy with a lot of content about Microsoft's approach to a few different things: sustainability, law enforcement, access to data, child exploitation. Microsoft announced a new agreement with Network Business Systems. That's who they're going to partner with to get broadband internet out into rural communities, starting in Illinois, Iowa, and South Dakota. And that is expected to kind of be a test bed, and then it could move forward from there. Microsoft also announced a new partnership with NASDAQ. The market site's moving to the cloud, and it's moving to Microsoft's cloud. So that was a big move for Microsoft, big feather in the cap. Unified cloud security strategy got written up and talked about. So, you know, the realization these days is that cloud is, if you're doing it right, you're likely doing multi-cloud. So you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. If you remember the outage from a couple weeks ago that Microsoft had, it impacted a lot of people. They were able to recover. No data was lost, but there was a time frame where services were limited or unavailable. So having a backup, having an option to be able to flip a switch and turn on resources and easily just reroute stuff to another cloud base while another one is down, because there's no guarantee. I mean, they talk about 99.9% uptime. So outages are fairly limited on most of these cloud-based systems, but there's a smartness to having a unified approach. And this specifically, this blog post talks about the security strategy, but you need to be thinking about where your sort resources are, what cloud they're on, and how they back each other up, and how you back up from within the same cloud as well and have alternative zones. So some real good reading there to catch up on that. Microsoft also announced the acquisition of a company called Loeb. They are an AI startup that's working on deep learning development tools to continue to help implement that kind of stuff into AI and machine learning into apps and functional services. Skype Insider Preview now has, they have flipped the switch, and the SMS support called SMS Connect is now live in the Android app and in the Skype preview app on desktop. So now there's another option. So we had the integration with Cortana. We recently, a few weeks ago, got your phone integrated, which got the messaging app update a couple weeks ago. And now SMS Connect in Skype gives you the ability to send and respond to SMS messages via your Android phone through your computer, through Windows 10. And so that is handy, and that's to do it without having to take over your text services on the phone, so you don't have to switch to Skype as your SMS app. You can keep what you're using. So that came out. There's discussions about how to integrate Skype calls into your content with the new creator features in the Content Studio that Skype has. It's a really robust system for creating content, video content, and things of that nature. It kind of goes above and beyond the recording option we got a couple weeks ago. The Microsoft Apps app that is on Android has been rebranded as the Your Phone Companion app for Android devices. So I got some screenshots of that change that came out that was announced early last week, I think, and then we saw the update. I finally saw the update later in the week. And it does the same thing. It provides that continuity, the connection between your Android phone and your Windows 10 desktops in order to do the SMS thing and to see your pictures, okay? But they've just changed the app to more aptly correspond to what it is. The app discovery aspect of the Your Phone Companion is still there. It's a tab, or you can swipe up and see recommended apps, Microsoft apps, but they've named it Your Phone Companion in order to kind of connect the dots between what's happening on Windows 10 devices and what's happening on the phone. I also have got a link in here to the Your Phone app FAQ. So if you got questions about the Your Phone app, you can look that up on that. Microsoft working on a solution for advertising in mixed reality. That's something that they haven't done yet, but hey, it's an opportunity to possibly insert some type of advertisement into the mixed reality environment. News from Rich Woods over at Neowin about the fact that Microsoft has stopped selling the Core M3 model of the Surface laptop. That was one of the low-end device with the M3 model was fanless, and it was a low-end kind of mobile processor. That could be in relationship to the upcoming hardware event, or it could be the simple fact that there's just no stock anymore and Microsoft's not selling it, and of course, because of non-availability. The Microsoft To-Do app has a redesigned web app now. It's become much more robust. So if you access the Microsoft To-Do on the web, you can access that. It's also, I noticed on all my systems, I have release preview, or I'm on a fast ring or slow ring or skip ahead. The To-Do app also got some updates as well recently. Spotify now allows you to download 10,000 tracks per device. Used to be 3,300. If you have that many tracks you need to download, you now can if you need to put them on your local device. On the Xbox side of the house, man, if you don't follow Xbox Insider and the pace of their releases, you think we don't get many releases from Windows 10 folks in the Insider program, there were 1, 2, 3 Alpha Ring 1810 updates last week. This is the fall update, or the October update for Xbox One. There were 3 builds released between the 10th and the 14th of September. And then on the skip ahead side, which is getting out into next year's first feature update, there were 2 releases 2 days apart onto the consoles. So that's 5 full advanced ring builds that were released on Xbox One last week, if you're an insider, and all of the features and updates that come with that. Interesting video I came across last week. It's a little long, but it's a really interesting listen because a user experience expert, talks about why Fortnite is such a success, and it's the way they implement tips and handling and UI interface stuff on the screen during the game and before the game and all of that. It is an extremely interesting listen to understand that from a UX perspective. Microsoft has added a couple new games to backward compatibility. If you're not paying attention to this, they have a page that lists all this stuff. The 2 new titles are Rumble Roses XX and Zone of the Elders HD Collection. So these are older titles or maybe not as well-known titles, but again, that backwards compatibility library continues to grow. Makes Xbox One X and Xbox One S and Xbox One OG even a terrific platform because you get to bring so much of your old stuff from Xbox 360 forward. What else did we have? The new EA Access Hub app that was released to insiders a couple weeks ago for testing is now available to everyone on Xbox One. So even if you're not an insider, you can get the new hub. It's very nice. It runs much faster. It's a little bit more intuitive about access and data and content and understanding what's there and what's available. It even has some stats to show how many of the things you've tried, how many trials you've tried. And so it is a really nice remake of that app. And I've got a link here to Electronic Arts post about what's all new in there, so you can check that out. Plus, I posted screenshots of the new app as well. Warface Beta, which looks like a Call of Duty style game, is now available to all Xbox insiders on Xbox One. This is a side benefit of being an insider. You get early access to some of this stuff. We had early access to Halo the Master Chief Collection before it came out on Xbox Game Pass on the 1st of September. So it's a nice, you get kind of early access to some of these games through that. Speaking of early access, Forza Horizon 4, one of my favorite franchises, the demo for Xbox One and PC was released last week. It has gone gold. That means that Playground Games and Microsoft Studios is done with the code for the game. So it is being either prepared onto DVDs for commercial sale in the store in a box or prepped for digital distribution. We are 11 days away from early access, so if you've ordered the Ultimate Edition, you have access as early as the 28th of September. And then I think those of you who ordered that kind of in-between version, between the normal one and the Ultimate one, get access a couple days later. And then on October 2nd, unfortunately the day of the New York event that I won't be home for, the full version of Forza Horizon will become available through retail. But if you're a Game Pass subscriber, that $60 game is yours as part of your Xbox Game Pass subscription. So you'll be able to download it that day on the 2nd of October. Don't know about pre-downloading, so I'm not sure about that. We don't know how big the final version is going to be, but I got to believe it's going to be in the 50-60 gigabyte range. And we still don't know what the cost is going to be for the VIP package that allows you to get the ultimate package of add-ons that are available as part of the ultimate package so that you can put that stuff and have that same capability by getting the game within Game Pass. But I have seen this stuff online for it in the store, so I know it's coming, or at least every indicator is that it's coming. And if you are going to be getting Forza Horizon 4, one of the things that you earn in Forza Horizon 4 is influence. This was kind of like in Forza Horizon 3 when you earned fans, and this is the same kind of concept. But if you want to get ahead of the game and you want to earn some influence before the actual game is released on the 2nd of October, go to Mixer and watch any Forza Horizon 4 demo screen, and there's quite a few going on right now, and look at the name of the title, and you'll see a little blue ribbon. If you see that blue ribbon, as you watch that stream, you're earning influence. So that allows you to kind of build up that influence and gain a little head start, even though you can't play the game yet. So it's a handy little thing. I got a link here in the show notes to the post from the Mixer that explains that and how you gain access to those things. part of Forza Horizon 4 is going to be the Halo experience. There's a Warthog, there's a jump ship, there's Master Chief, and so there is looks like there's going to be some type of a race that involves those elements. There's a video out now showing this off, so you can go check that out. They've also given a deal that if you're not an Xbox Game Pass subscriber, you can get Xbox Game Pass, which means on the 2nd of October you get Forza Horizon 4. But in addition, you will get, if you subscribe for 1 year, which is $99, and that's access to over 100 games in the Xbox Game Pass library, they will give you a free download of Forza Horizon 3, which is the last version of Forza Horizon, which is the more arcade-style game, and Forza 7 Motorsports, which came out last fall, and they alternate years, is the latest version of the more sim-style Forza Horizon game, or Forza game, Forza Motorsport game. So you get $99 is the price for 12 months of Xbox One Game Pass or Xbox Game Pass, but you also get free downloads for those two games. So you add those to your stable, and then on the 2nd of October, boom, Forza Horizon 4. So it's a really, really good deal. And Forza Horizon 4 is a $60 title. Right now, Forza Motorsport 7 is retailing digitally for about $40. Forza Horizon 3 is somewhere in the $30 to $40 range. So you're getting about $130 worth of Forza game for $99 for a year. And then if you maintain your Xbox Game Pass subscription, you'll maintain those games. You'll be able to maintain get access to the rest of the massive library that continually is updated each month. So it really is a good deal. Subscription-based gaming is, I think, the wave of the future. This is going to be the way, and Microsoft announced at E3. Every first-party game, so Forza Horizon's the, one of the first, what's the pirate one, the sea thing? I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was free when it came out back in February. So first-party titles are going to be free the day of their release through the Game Pass. You don't have to wait. So there's really good value in that. So whether it be EA Access, which has over 50 games, or it's Game Pass, there's great value in this style of subscription. You just got to be patient. I said this over the weekend to somebody about EA Access, or I said it in my blog post about EA Access and the new hub. If you are patient, for me, I'm a Madden and PGA Tour player, right? I love those games. They are day of release game releases for me. However, EA Access releases them within their Game Pass, you know, usually within a year of their release. At least that's how the last few have gone. But I've always gone out and I bought the games on the day of release. Well, I'm really working hard. NFL 19, Madden 19 came out back in September. I have not purchased it yet. I've played most of the 10-hour demo that I get in EA Access as part of the hub. That's one of the things you get, whether you buy a game or not, is 10 hours of free playtime with credit towards your purchase, 10% off. You get all the gamer score and other things and progress you make. But I'm now working really hard to be patient, to wait to get the Madden until it comes in EA Access. Because the style and way I play, I tend to play solo anyhow. I don't play online. So by just waiting a little bit longer, I'll get that $60 game within the cost of my Game Pass. And that's where the real value is. I'm not Game Pass, but EA Access. And EA Access is only $30 a year. So I'm paying less for EA Access to access to 50 games than I would for just one game that comes out through them. This applies to NBA 19 that just came out. There's a 10-hour trial on EA Access. So if you're patient, you can really make those subscriptions pay off by waiting for games to come to them as opposed to going out and buying games on day one that are going to come to them later anyway. Okay, what else have we got? 5 Microsoft Studio games are now available on Steam and PC disc. The titles are ReCore, Super Lucky's Tale, Zoo Tycoon, Disneyland Mysteries, I think it's called, and Rush. So those 5 titles are now available on Steam and on PC disc for $20 each. So that's another expansion of Microsoft titles that have come out. Twitch Beta is now available on Xbox One for Xbox Insiders. It's a brand new app built from the ground up. It's a little buggy at this point for me, but it doesn't work too bad. But there's some pretty cool features integrated. You see live previews. You can easily watch the people you like to watch stream on Twitch. And, of course, I believe it also sets up for streaming via Twitch if you want to on the console. And then some other Microsoft stuff coming down the line. Data Analyst, he's got ALS. types with his eyes to help modernize companies. So this gentleman suffers from ALS, but yet using technology and that type of support that's built into Windows 10, they are able to do the data analysis. They type with their eyes using these accessibility features that are in Windows 10 and are able to perform very high-level type jobs because of that capability and those capabilities that are built into Windows 10. So a really good story there. A really neat story about how the female lead of 343 Studios, the people who build Halo, how her name's Bonnie Ross. It's about how she came to be the what she describes in the best job in the world, and that's leading the team that builds Halo and its franchise. Microsoft published their security servicing criteria for Windows. So if you're curious about how the approach Microsoft takes to servicing bugs and security issues in Windows, it's a really good read. I've got a link to the postmortem, the explanation and background behind the 4 September outage that Microsoft had a couple weeks ago with their cloud services in the Southeast. So you can read into that and see what they did and how they're approaching future to be able to negate and minimize those types of issues in the future. Tech support scammers, a story about how tech support scammers have found a home on Microsoft TechNet page. But I want you to know that about a week later, Microsoft published that they did a massive cleanup of those TechNet pages, and so they're not there anymore. So proactive steps by Microsoft to keep that stuff. And then you'll remember last week we talked about the fact that Google has said they're no longer carrying ads for support providers and things of that nature because of the it's just way too scammy. Chromebooks looks like they're going to get native network connectivity with Windows PCs. This means you'll be able to have a Chromebook on your network and easily access storage you have on your Windows devices that you're sharing. So it's out in a canary build or an early build of Chrome OS, waiting to see that come out, and so I can try that out and detail that for everybody. Windows file sharing, yeah, that's the same. Just another link. I got a story from Thorat.com and ZDNet about that feature. Qualcomm introducing the Snapdragon Wear 3100, a low-power chip for smartwatches. This could truly be a breakout chip for extending battery life and providing performance for smartwatches that are being used these days. So we're going to watch on that and see what happens. I'm starting to become very intrigued by a possible getting an Android Wear smartwatch or something like that. I'm just watching the market right now and see what comes out. From the Spreaker blog, if you're thinking about podcasting, they talk about 5 fears or 5 concerns that might be preventing you from podcasting and how to combat those. I'm telling you, it is challenging. As somebody who sits behind the mic on a regular basis, even now with almost 282 episodes under my belt, there are times that I get frustrated that it feels like there's nobody listening, but then something will happen where you know people are listening, you get that feedback, and it kind of reinvigorates you. And I that's why I appreciate you all so much in listening to Observe Tech. But there, if you're thinking about podcasting or you do podcasts, this is great reading to kind of understand the mentality and the approach. Jeff Bezos from Amazon has now unveiled his $2 billion day one fund that will focus on homeless families and preschool education. This is his first real kind of, here's what I'm going to be a philanthropist about, and this is what I'm going to focus on. He's gotten some heat over the last few months about what he's spending his fortune on. We know he's doing the rocket stuff, but what are you going to do to help people? And this is his response to that and his response to that in general. Android 9 Pi, thoroughly reviewed. This blog post over on ARS Technica will take you through Android Pi thoroughly. 19,000 words worth of review. So if you've been looking for an in-depth review of Android 9 Pi, this is it. Okay, go check it out and read through it. Trend Micro had all their apps pulled off the Mac platform because apparently it was taking a snapshot of user history 2 weeks prior to its installation and uploading that to Trend Micro servers for analysts. Trend Micro came out and apologized for it not being a known thing that they were doing in the background, but they said there was a good reason for it in that they were looking for signs of past issues with malware or bad sites and things of that nature. Always be upfront. You know, be transparent. If Trend Micro had popped up a notice and said, "Hey, user who just installed our app, can we check your last 2 weeks of browser history to see if there's anything questionable in there when it comes to malware, ransomware, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?" the vast majority of people would have said yes. I mean, they were choosing to install the app, right, that was going to monitor the same thing. This just gives an upfront permission to look at the last 2 weeks worth or however long. Had they popped that up and presented that to the individual who just voluntarily decided to install their app, wouldn't that make a difference? And then you wouldn't have all this other stuff going on. NASA and Russia officials both recently made a joint statement about this whole hole in the Soyuz capsule up on the space station that caused the leak a few weeks ago, the leak was caused by it. Looks like it was done by someone. There's been some vicious rumors running around that from Russia that says somebody, that an American astronaut did it or another astronaut did it, and they got in there with the drill. The likelihood is this occurred on the ground. Somebody tried to hide their tracks, patch the hole, and hope it slid by. But they are continuing their investigation and to figure out exactly how that occurred. And they're also inspecting all the other Soyuz capsules for similar type issues. Fake charities. So Hurricane Florence hit the Carolinas and the southeast coast this past weekend. It is flooding, severe levels of flooding, major flood stages on many of the rivers there, as well as the damage from the winds and all of that. And it just moved like a snail, 2 and 3 miles an hour for 3 days. So it drenched that area. That has gotten everything overflowing, everything flooding. But know now that there will be fake charities, fake scams, trying to get help for Hurricane Florence victims that are not valid. So there is a post from US CERT that talks about potential phishing scams, and it gives you some links to valid resources to find help for that kind of stuff. Okay, my last note, I've told you guys about this blog on Microsoft before. It's on MSD, and it's called The Old New Thing. It's written by Raymond Chin, who's been around Microsoft for a long time. And this is a very short, three-paragraph one that he shared recently. And the title was, "Why Does the Zune HD Have the Message for Our Princess on the Inside of the Case? And why is she a princess?" So he explains that inside the Zune HD case, it's engraved the message "For Our Princess." It's a tribute to an administrative assistant on the Zune team who passed away during development of the project. She got the nickname Princess from a group she worked for in before joining the Zune team. And there was another administrative assistant on the team who kind of been dubbed the queen of everything. And in response, this other woman was named the princess of everything. And so when she passed away, they had it engraved on the inside of the Zune case, "For Our Princess." So it's kind of neat to hear this background of why things are what they are around Microsoft. So if you're not following this blog, I've got a link to it. He's got RSS, so you can see all these things. He's written a book about the old new thing in that approach, but this is just a really neat blog to be following because you find out those tidbits. Those are really neat tidbits that give you a lot of background and insight into Microsoft and some of the things they've done in the past. All right, heads up, everybody, as I'm getting ready to wrap things up for episode 282. The 5th of October, so I've already mentioned that next week I'm at Ignite. That may or may not impact next week's show. I am in all-day events on Sunday with MVP events, but I'm thinking I should be able to get a recording in Sunday night in my hotel room that I'll be able to post up as the blog. It might be shorter than normal, might be just updating on insider stuff and a quick snapshot about what I've experienced in Ignite that I can share at that point, but I will probably do something next Sunday night in my hotel room after that pre-day event. And then I have Ignite all that week. I come home I believe it's the Friday afternoon. I come home on the 28th from Ignite. And so I'll be doing my post-Ignite work. I will have a podcast that weekend in order to wrap up Ignite. That will be the focus, the news from Ignite and other things like that I learned. And then I head to New York City on Tuesday, the 2nd of October. I'll be there for the hardware event at 4 o'clock that afternoon. I will stay overnight and fly home the next morning on the 3rd of October from New York back down here to Jacksonville. And then that Thursday night, so I get home on the Wednesday from New York, that Thursday night I'm on Gadget Geeks with Jim Collison. Now you guys have heard me there before. I've talked about Gadget Geeks before. It's Jim Collison and Mike Weiger's weekly look at technology, and I'm on there a couple times a year to talk about feature updates, which we will have a very good idea of when that's coming out. We'll have the post hardware event news to talk about, and of course everything and anything related to Ignite. So I will be on the 5 October show. I will be tweeting about that. I'll be talking about it in each of the future podcast episodes to keep you in the loop. So that'll be coming, and then we will see where we go from there. So a very busy couple of weeks coming up. but good busy because it's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of technology, a lot of advancements, a lot of news, a lot of new features, a lot of new services. And so it is going to, it's one of those exciting times around all of this as well. So stay tuned, stay in touch, keep your systems up to date, and we will see you next week at Microsoft Ignite. Hey, by the way, if you're coming to Ignite and you listen to the podcast, track me down, hit me up on social media, let's meet, shake hands, and so I can thank you in person for being a listener of the show. And for all of you who I can't meet in person, thank you all as well for being part of this podcast and part of the audience. So until next week, take care, we'll see you.